What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, May 1st, 2023, and this week's episode, Who is the Bantamweight King? We'll talk about this past Saturday's weekend in mixed martial arts, Song Yadong taking on Ricky Simone at UFC Vegas 72. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news. BKFC had quite the Saturday night, and Nate Diaz had quite the Sunday evening last week. We'll get into all of that. We'll talk about a change to an upcoming Fight Night main event, and we will cap it off by talking about this weekend's upcoming MMA action. ONE Championship has their debut in the United States, and the UFC returns to New Jersey with a doubleheader that is sure to get fans riled up. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. Gloomy day, but it's not going to stop us from talking about MMA. Having fun. What do you say?
You know what? I got to say, last week's show, my allergies were really kicking my butt. Kind of like Song Yadong was kicking Ricky Simone. But today, I feel a little more like the first round. You know, I feel more like Chad Mendes and Eddie Alvarez, I will say. I got to say, you know, I keep bringing this up, but every week we have so many little things going on in MMA that I'm like, I got to say this, if I didn't work in the business and this was just like my thing that I tuned into as a fan, like a favorite TV show, I would feel like I'm just spoiled. Like, I totally get the, you know, I really do think it's being taken for granted just how much stuff is just happening in our universe. You know, it's really a great time, and I've just got to say, it's like when I was doing the rundown, I was like, I don't even feel like we're gonna glaze over a lot of stuff that could probably be its own sandwich, as we like to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, let's get into this. Saturday, UFC Vegas 72. I'll say right now, obviously not the most stacked card, obviously a few finishes. Rodolfo Vieira obviously does his thing, you know, returns to the, yeah, well, obviously always a submission guy, but gets another one. But this bantamweight fight, so I do believe I mislabeled it, that they were promoted. They were pushed back a week, so they were going to fight last week on the undercard of Pavlovich. They bumped them a week, added two extra rounds. Song Yadong, Ricky Simone, ranked bantamweights, both on a roll. And quite frankly, Natalie, Song just, I tried to find a word, but that was kind of like bantamweight Jessica Andrade, if I may say so. That was a very gangster performance. Physicality, speed, power, shot selection, he just looked like a little beast. I mean, just so powerful, so fast, was finding his mark. Ricky was trying to stay with him, but it just felt like he could not get that respect of that young man enough. It just didn't seem to be happening no matter what he tried. Goes for takedowns, can't complete them. Song, cardio-wise, looked pretty good going into that championship round. And, of course, gets him out of there in the fourth round. Just really authoritative finish. Really one of those kinds of fights that when you talk about his fight with Corey Sandhagen, where he was doing really well, and, you know, he gets cut, leads to the injury. Those two performances back-to-back do make me feel like this is that one. We can start talking about Song Yadong, top five bantamweight, you know, getting one of those kind of fights next. What about you?
Yeah, definitely. He proved himself, and, you know, the short notice and everything. So I bet he's gained a lot of favor with the UFC, and then certainly earned a lot of respect and admiration, I think, from the fans, because that was a gangster performance. He was going at it from round one, you know, the jab and the kick and just the aggression, you know, takedown. He got taken down, I think, a couple of times, so I don't know what the takedown defense, but as far as being put on the canvas, but when he was, I think in the first round or second round, he was fighting back like a berserker. Like, he was just firing his arm upward into Ricky Simone's downward strikes, and they were just basically hitting forearms. It was actually very crazy and hilarious. Song Yadong stands up at the end and shakes his head like, nah, you didn't get me down there. So Song Yadong was game. Ricky Simon tried his best. You know, he had a couple of a little bit of success with the jab, but just wasn't enough. I was very impressed with Song Yadong, as I think everybody else was too. Knocked Ricky Simon down, I think at the end of round four, right? Just at the bell, just before the buzzer.
Well, I thought it was three, and then he finished the job in four.
Oh, he finished it in four. Okay. I mean, it was a really, really strong performance. Very accurate with his punches and a lot of power. A lot of power. So I'm looking forward to the future. He's shouting, I'm the best. And yeah, definitely vaulted himself, you know, towards the top of that bantamweight division, no doubt.
I mean, so this comes off the heels of, you know, Patchy Mix beating Rafion Stotts, the title fight this week, Corey Sandhagen a month ago beating Chito Vera. Sean O'Malley's out there somewhere. All these guys, Merab Dvalishvili, obviously, in March. This is obviously just, you know, the title of this week's show, Who is the Bantamweight King? I'm not about to say Song is right there in for the throne now. However, let's start talking about what his year could look like in the context of everything going on. He did mention it. Sean O'Malley, probably not going to happen. I agree with that. Sean O'Malley is waiting for that title shot. I actually appreciate the fact that Sean has more or less become quiet in terms of talking trash.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's understand like, hey, let me just knock this off and just kind of like Jon Jones, kind of like some of these other guys, the absence almost makes you, it just raises anticipation. I think Sean is trying to do a little bit of that. Song turns his sights. I thought very smart call out, looking for Marlon Chito Vera. I think that makes a lot of sense because one, top ranked opponent, was right there for the title shot. Maybe catching him at a great time. They fought before. He won it before, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he did. Controversial, but he did. I think Song has only improved in the 3 or so years since then. I believe they fought 2020. I think that's very smart. I think when you look at it, you're not about to get an instant rematch with Corey. Corey's probably got his eyes on Merab in a title eliminator. Sean O'Malley, we already talked about. And to be quite honest with you, and we'll obviously get into this later in the show, but if you ask me, it doesn't even matter who wins, Aljo or Henry. Even if they have like this barn burner split decision 5-rounder on Saturday, I still think that the UFC is just going to go Sean O'Malley next. Like, I just have a hard time seeing a scenario where we're going to get an instant rematch either way. So I do think that that kind of sets it up where Corey will get Merab, Sean will get the next title shot, in which case all those guys are now booked and taken. Aljo or Henry needs a break. Song Chito makes perfect sense in my opinion. Unless, for whatever reason, one of those guys just doesn't take damage, sticks around, and they want to run it back quick, then I could see Song taking on the loser of Aljo or Henry, but I see that less likely as Song and Chito just running it back somewhere on a card. It could bolster a pay-per-view, it could headline its own fight night, nothing more to add.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. I'm on board.
There we go, let's get it. Like I said, there's obviously a lot going on in the whole weekend of, you know, not mixed martial arts, but essentially combat sports. This one, I'm not going to lie. If you told me it was going to pop off quite this way, I wouldn't have believed you. But it did. BKFC. We had talked about it. We didn't really preview it. But Mike Perry taking on Luke Rockhold. I don't know if you saw the highlights, but straight up, I did not expect Luke to look as small against Mike as he did. And what I mean by that is that when you think about them in MMA and Luke Rockhold fighting at 205, being a rather tall and built 85er, looks like a very athletically gifted guy at 85, and then Mike Perry, not exactly like a big gorilla at 170, that when you think about them both at 85 and bare knuckle, I really expected the size to feel a lot different. Instead, Mike Perry just kind of stayed in his face. Luke Rockhold, the success kind of came, you know, too little, too infrequently. And even though he landed a few clean shots on Mike, Mike stayed in his face, catches him with the flurry. I'm sure you've seen it. I guess, cracked Luke's teeth. He's busted up, and he just calls a Roberto Duran no mas. And so, one, I was like, wow. You know, like, if you had told me, I would have said, all right, if Luke's chin is, you know, not what it was, then we're just going to see one of those shots where he just goes down, and that's all she wrote. I also thought cardio could be a thing. Just, he's had injuries, you know, all that other stuff. No, instead, I think he just was a little shocked by the physicality. And then in the co-main event, not for nothing, Eddie Alvarez and Chad Mendez both look like they're trying out for Jersey Shore MMA edition. And they just kind of crack with each other for a few times. Both get knockdowns, both get this. And Eddie Alvarez takes a split decision. Good night of action. I appreciate a good night of carnage as much as anyone. But then the thing that capped this all off was Conor McGregor right there, and he enters the ring wearing a BKFC belt to face off with Mike Perry.
Who
Anyway,
gave him the belt? Who gave him
let's talk about, well, I'm gonna
the
toss it to you. So
Okay.
that's what you missed last time on Glee. What do you think of this?
Okay, first of all, yeah, Rockhold Perry. Definitely, when you think of Luke Rockhold, and even in the promotional materials, the posters and all that stuff, he looks cut. He looks huge. And as soon as you see him in the squared circle, he just kind of looks thin. And I don't know if it's the lighting or what it is or his posture. You know, he almost tries to look too relaxed, and it makes him look a little floppy. So he didn't look, as all there as I expected. Okay. Here's the thing that I've come to realize as I watch BKFC and have been watching since the very beginning. People who have not competed in bare knuckle fighting and aren't naturally brawler or scrapper types, and I would put Luke Rockhold in those categories. I'd also put Conor McGregor in those categories too. Not a brawler, not a scrapper. When they get in there, they become overwhelmed. It's never what they expected it to be. It's always faster. The pace is always faster, and the punches always hurt more than they expected. And so I think that's what we saw with Luke Rockhold. Mike Perry went after him fast. You know, Mike Perry is the kind of guy who probably got in a lot of street fights. I don't think Luke Rockhold did too much of that. And it shows. It's just a different mentality, a different fight style that you need to bring to the BKFC squared circle. So Luke Rockhold's footwork was a little sloppy. His punches were slow. I think he expected it to be like, okay, we're gonna get to know each other. We're gonna figure this out. Mike Perry was not there for that. He went forward and never stopped going forward. And the body work, that's a key to BKFC, to bare knuckle, I should say. You always wanna put more power into your body shots, a little bit less on the face because it's gonna hurt your hands. And then as the opponent gets weaker, then you can start hitting them hard in the face. Mike Perry was doing just that. So he had the perfect game plan. He had the experience, and Luke Rockhold, as you said, no mas. He didn't want anything more to do with it. And I don't blame him because there's, the type of person that doesn't care when their nose is busted or their teeth are flying out of their mouth. And then there's the kind of person that starts thinking, oh man, I don't want to lose my teeth. I need them. I don't want to look messed up. And so Luke Rockhold, former, cologne model, was definitely having that conversation in his head. And I was surprised that Dan Marie Liotta stopped it because I didn't realize, like, he just showed him his teeth, but how many other times does someone have a, cracked tooth or spitting teeth out like Anthony Smith and they don't stop the fight? So, I think Marie Liotta rightly understood that Luke Rockhold was telling him, I don't want to fight anymore, and this is why. Huge win for Mike Perry. And I'm actually pretty happy for him. The man, and you mention this every time we talk about him. The man has found a way to make a really successful career out of signing freely with whatever promotion he wants to since leaving the UFC. And hopefully he's, getting paid handsomely as he does so. I don't think we'll see Luke Rockhold back in the bare knuckle arena. It's just not his thing, and that's fine. As for Mendes and Alvarez, yeah, it was a fine scrap. They were going back and forth, entertaining. They were both on the same page. And so they weren't charging forward at each other, unlike Luke Rockhold and Mike Perry. Like, Mike Perry's just a totally different animal. Lastly, Conor McGregor. Dave Feldman was brimming, right, to have Conor McGregor in his arena to promote his promotion. And it played out beautifully, right? The announcer or the interviewer was doing a great job of getting Connor hyped up. Connor was playing his part perfectly. Mike Perry was playing his part perfectly. It all came together. I don't think we're ever going to see Conor McGregor compete in BKFC. However, that was a great moment.
Yeah, in regards to Luke Rockhold, I mean, like I said, like I always say, secure the bag. Far be it from me to say he shouldn't still try to do it, but we've seen this, when you're a veteran and a guy like that who's maybe like, okay, not as red hot as you were for a minute, sometimes it almost feels like, all right, now you're just being used to build up the next guy on that they want to be a UFC superstar on their way to championships and all that. And so I understand him saying, I want to see if the grass is still greener for me, bigger fish, smaller pond, still get to kind of do everything. And every fight isn't about the next hungry young lion. I could fight, I could try to fight more veterans. I could try to fight these guys. And while I still got it a bit, I don't know the bare knuckle was the right avenue. I'm sure he was paid very well, but he already said it. He wants to do something with gloves next, and I think that's better for him. Yeah, and then of course Eddie and Mendez. Obviously Chad said he's calling it a day. He's had a great run. Sounds like he secured the bag with BKFC for what was it, two fights? Good for him. Eddie Alvarez, he talked about how much he enjoyed it. A guy like Eddie who held gold in Bellator, held gold in UFC, obviously one championship didn't go his way, but the fact that this guy is also kind of trying to just secure himself financially post UFC, I think it's great. I think that were he to go back to UFC today, he's not out there talking about fights with Gaethje and Islam and all that. He's probably more the middle of the pack, Armin Sarukian, Mateusz Gamrot, and I can respect him saying that's not the kind of thing I want to have for myself right now. I feel like if it's not about getting me to the title, then let me secure the bag in these better style matchups outside of that. And so good for him. And yeah, Mike Perry is just doing what Mike Perry does. I did hear a rumor he was very close to being part of another big exhibition, or not exhibition, but let's just say that you would have thought, you know how we talk about, man, he's doing such a good job. BKFC, Triller, etc. He would have added one more big one that would have made you say, dang, he
Okay,
really
which
has
one?
figured it out. I gotta keep that a secret. But I could tell you, when I heard it, I was like, ooh, that is good. But it
Connor,
just didn't
yeah.
happen.
Oh, it
But
didn't
they were in
happen.
talks. They were in
Okay,
talks.
got
Anyway, I'll tell you later. Sorry, guys. Even I can't
it.
tell everything. I know, like, look, sometimes you have to keep the tea in the cup. I'm sorry.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Anyway, the Conor McGregor thing. So here's how I felt about it. I'm sure Conor was. I know this is just rumor. There's no evidence. If you tell me that he was paid an appearance fee to look like he was just really amped up to watch two guys he knocked out badly in bare knuckle, I believe it. I don't think it's the most preposterous thing ever speculated about in our wide world of sports, right? That being said, look, once again, make some money. If they paid him well, good for him. I don't know how I feel about him facing off with Mike Perry when we have all this going on with Michael Chandler. And it's just, okay, he is not obligated to not appear at another MMA event that isn't UFC. I get that. That being said, when we have all this talk about USADA, when is the fight happening? Remember, we're still. Okay, he needs, quote, 6 months, right? In USADA, typically.
Well,
He
unless you're
blew
Brock Lesnar, you know.
past that in March. And we haven't heard about him returning to the testing pool. And I bring that up because The Ultimate Fighter, as of, I believe, yesterday, is 1 month away from airing. And now we're in this scenario where it's like, we don't even have a date for the coaches' fight. And maybe they announce it a little closer and it's all for nothing, all this speculation. They get a deal done and it's in the September pay-per-view, and it was all like, oh, what were you guys worried about? Blah, blah, blah. Totally. But I couldn't help but feel like it was a little awkward that, like, you're acting like you're down to fight BKFC right now. And it's like, bruh, you got a fight that you haven't even finished for UFC. Like, what are we doing? It almost, I hate to say it because I feel like we're going to get through tough and we're going to feel differently. But it almost felt like, all right, so do we just not care about Michael Chandler anymore? Like, because now we're talking about Mike Perry, BKFC.
The other Mike.
I'm like, what, are we just saying this? And like I said, tough is going to air. We're probably going to get more amped up. We're going to get it, you know, spammed across our social media stuff. What did he say? What did they do every Wednesday? All that stuff. I get it. But part of me still felt like, hey, I want to, you know, I would rather feel more amped up about you giving us a date, and now we have something to look forward to. Circle it on the calendar. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Okay.
What about you?
Well, I wasn't bothered by it. I was excited by it, and I didn't feel conflicted. And I wasn't worried about the Michael Chandler thing. I kind of just enjoyed the moment because, look, whether they paid him or not, is it pretty sure that they paid him to be there? Or
like I said, it's all speculation.
Okay. Well, I kind of feel like it's the kind of thing that he would just want to see. The man loves combat sports. But in any case, whether they paid him or not, if someone calls you out and says, come face off with me, and you're a fighter, and you're, you know, especially as famous as Conor McGregor, you're going to go in there. Like, you can't not answer the call. So I think he probably felt a little pressured, but he was like, I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to stay seated. So he went in there. He played the part. He waved his little hat, so to speak. I think he kind of just did them a favor because he genuinely enjoyed the event. And he was very careful with his words. He just kept saying, I'm into this. I'm into this. He never said, like, you know, let's fight soon. Like, it wasn't anything declarative. I think he was very wise with his word choice. And so, you know, helping BKFC, and I don't think it hurts the UFC either because it just keeps him in the news cycle, whereas he wouldn't have been this week if not for that. So I'm not as bothered by it. I rather enjoyed it, and I'm okay with it, and I'm not concerned about Michael Chandler. But okay, you know, it does put the shine on another, on the wrong mic. I'll give you that.
I mean, yeah, it just feels very awkward. Let me ask you one final note on this. As we are, I'm sure we're going to keep revisiting this until we actually get a date. Do you think we are going to see an exemption happen for Conor and he fights September, like right about where the show is supposed to end? Or do you think that it's going to be a scenario where the show finishes airing in like late August and he doesn't fight until December?
I think we're going to get the exemption. We can't wait that long. That's crazy. And he always says he wants to be active, and he's already been out for so long recovering. I think we get the exemption. The only issue I have with that is that it's just going to, like, mire the whole fight with controversy, right? It's always going to be part of the storyline. Oh, you got your exemption, you're a cheater, and this and that. And so it's going to kind of sully, should he win, the victory. But, you know, it is what it is. So I think there will be an exemption, yes.
It does. I agree with you. I get it. As more time goes on, you're starting to feel like, oh, well, Conor's going to do what Conor does. And if he decides he doesn't want to fight Mike till January, well, guess what? They're waiting till January. I don't think that's going to happen. I understand why a lot of people feel that way. But I do think that ultimately, yeah, they're just going to say, they're going to call a macaroni. They're going to make an executive decision to say, you only need a test for 3 months, but all those 3 months better be clean. Mm-hmm. And whatever, call it macaroni. Let's get this, you know, as John McCarthy would say, are you ready? Are you ready? Let's get it on.
Let's get it on. That's
yeah.
Right.
So, but yeah, I certainly agree with it. I know if I'm a UFC fighter and I'm like, well, why the heck am I still freaking, I still got 4 months left of USADA. Can I get my, then it's like, you're not Conor McGregor's son. I completely get why other fighters would feel that way. But once again, when you bring in that kind of money, certain things are done for you. Kind of like Dana White said it himself. When you're Conor McGregor, guess what? If you want some of your guys to be on tough, we can put some of your guys on tough.
Yep.
You know, it's
These are
once again,
facts.
when you bring that much money, then we could talk about doing favors, right? Otherwise, I get it. It's more your help. We're helping you, not the other way around. This is true of many businesses, and I understand it doesn't always feel good, does it? But this is certainly the game also, and you got to look at it objectively from the outside. So there you go. Nate Diaz. I saw this and I was like, oh my goodness, here we go. I'm gonna just tell, so let's call the facts that we know. It's caught on camera after like a Misfits boxing event last Saturday. Yeah. What is it, last Saturday or Sunday? I don't know that the brawl actually made the rounds until after our show on Monday. So we might have even glazed over it. I'll be honest, part of me just kind of felt like, you know, I'll say it, I thought it was almost staged. You know, he just happens to find a Logan Paul lookalike? It just coincidentally before he's about to fight the brother? And Nate Diaz, who rolls 20 people deep and probably has security? You can't get near him. He was just at an event I did recently. Let me tell you something. Never even saw him physically in person. And that venue is small. So you tell me he's rolling that deep and some guy after an event just happens to get that close to him and start a street fight with like, what, 10 people? I'm not going to lie. I smelled some fishy business.
Okay. But,
okay, no, look, as more time has gone on, they filed the report. This guy, what is it, Jordan Peterson, I believe his name is. I just had the rundown. His name, where'd it go? Rodney Peterson, sorry.
Rodney Peterson.
Anyway, social media influencer, one-time boxer. I think he's part of the Misfits boxing. I couldn't tell you, but you know. So, you know, essentially it's all Logan Paul KSI type fights. Influencers of, you know, not Logan Paul, Jake Paul caliber. Doing some boxing, fans tune in, bit of pay-per-view, good stuff. All right, do your thing. But all right, so this happens. We still don't know what exactly started all this. And then it's just kind of come out there that like, okay, they put a warrant out for Nate. He pays the $10,000 bond. He's out on bail. He's going back to Stockton. Obviously, he has a press conference and a fight with Jake Paul in August. And press conference coming up. What are your thoughts?
It's crazy. Look, the footage is clearly there was mayhem on the streets. Because they weren't the only ones, you know, fighting. And it seemed like, yes, where was his team or his entourage, his friends, his buddy, where anyone, I don't know. But it kind of seemed like he was just stuck in the middle of a really bad situation. And I've read here and there that this guy was following him around, right, throughout the day or the week or something. So he was already pestering him. Already trying to get something going with Nate Diaz. In any case, thank you for showing me that second angle, because you can see that Nate Diaz is kind of trying to get away. He's trying to go into whatever bar or whatever that is behind him. And he turns around and sees this guy still coming after him, so he has to turn around and defend himself. To me, it truly looks like self-defense. Someone keeps coming after me. I'm on the street. There's other people fighting. I need to do whatever I can do to, you know, de-escalate. And he did the best thing he could do, right? He didn't punch him. He didn't kick him. He threw like a little baby knee when he had him in the guillotine. That's it. The only thing maybe he could have done is like gently, cradled his head down to the concrete. He kind of let it drop a little bit. All that is to say, it really just looks like an annoying person was trying to get Nate Diaz in a compromising situation, and Nate Diaz defended himself as smoothly as he could. So it sucks that he has to deal with all this nonsense, but that's what the world is now, man. People are just trying to get their little gotcha moment with celebrities and see how they can benefit from it. So I didn't like it, but hopefully Nate doesn't have to suffer too much from this annoying ordeal.
Yeah, I personally don't believe it will. I have a hard time thinking it will. I think that, once again, I think it's going to just come out, and I think they're going to They're going to drag it out as far as they can. For Rodney, it obviously is a big clout moment. It's like, okay, well, he does anything. How's the Nate Diaz stuff going? And suddenly he has a thing people care about, right? And now UFC people and all that, and it's headlines on MMA Junkie, so and so, such and such, how explains the court. It could get dropped tomorrow, like I feel like many things eventually do, and it's like, hey, what happened to that? And it's like, what, did we just stop talking about it? And it's like, yeah, but for sure, it does seem like, all right, so if he was being pursued and Nate just did his thing, I'm sure they're gonna sell the fact that it's like, well, you have a trained boxer. If you're getting paid to fight professionally, I don't care if you have 20 fights or one fight, are your hands not also considered weapons? Like, just because I have 50 fights, so I'm considered a shotgun in the street, you've had one fight and you're a little, revolver with two bullets, does that mean you did not come at me with a deadly weapon? No, you did, right? So that's how I feel about it. It's like, okay, if you were doing this and you started it, I'm sure the footage is out there. It's gotta be in today's world, TMZ style has to be so. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't think we're gonna see anything. I heard Helwani talk about it, and I guess he'd reached out to Nate, and I do agree. It's like Nate, I'm not saying Nate is Floyd Mayweather, but you would think a guy like this who rolls that deep that often would have the kind of security that can bail him out. Like, how does a guy like that have that happen to him on the street? You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry, you don't see this happening to a guy like, and maybe that's bad comparison, but like a LeBron. But the fact is, someone who is a lot closer to the A-list than 99% of the UFC roster, how does that happen to you? Why? Because you just roll like that? You just, like, Nate, you're not the hood guy anymore. You're too rich. You can't be fighting your own fights. Now you have people to fight fights for you. That's how it works. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's probably expensive. He's not LeBron
He's rich enough to have a security that doesn't let him get into street fights.
Maybe he was just taking a walk, you know, he just wanted some fresh air by himself
With that big
to collect his thoughts.
crew with him, I don't
Yeah, I
know.
know, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure we'll see. He's does the press conference, I think, next Tuesday or Wednesday with the Jake Paul. I'm sure it'll come up, and
It'll come up, yeah.
yeah. The June 3rd fight night. So it's gonna be Brendan Allen, Jack Hermanson. Jack unfortunately suffered an injury. Now Kai Kara France is taking on Amir Albazi in the main event. So they get promoted, undercard. They have a month to prepare for 5 rounds, so I think that's not too, not too crazy. I'm not gonna lie, I would have thought they would promote Miesha Tate just on the name value and her fight with Mayra Bueno Silva. I don't know if Miesha just said, I'm good, I don't want it, I'd rather stay 3 rounds and this and that, no pressure, less attention as the co-main event. Or if they made her an offer and she said, yeah, I just want more money. I don't know. I don't know if they ever asked her. I don't know if it ever came up. But the fact is, I thought they would have gone Miesha. But look, obviously, Kai Kara France fought for the interim title. Injury forced him out of the fight in Australia with Alex Perez. He's still one of the top flyweights out there. Amir Albazi, 5-fight win streak. And about the only knock against him is that he's had a lot of opponents pull out. And so he's been unable to stay active. He's kind of got that Manel Cape situation going for him right now. What are your thoughts on this one? Because it is still a good fight.
Yeah, it's a good fight. I mean, Kai Kara France always delivers, so that's my guess with why it became the main event. Miesha Tate is the bigger name, of course, former champion, but you know, we're still trying to figure out what she's going to look like on this return run, right? She looked great against Marion Renault, not so great against, is it
Murphy.
Ketlen Vieira? No, who did she fight?
Lauren Murphy. Oh, and
No,
Kellen, yeah.
Kelly, yeah. And so I think it's just not a guaranteed hit. Kai Kara France, I think that's a guaranteed hit. So I suspect that's the reasoning for that placement. But yeah, all around, I think it's a good fight. I always like seeing him in the cage. You know, that Brandon Moreno fight was I mean, let's not forget, he was winning that fight. It's just he got that liver shot and that was it. So he's always a good time for sure.
Yeah, and I think he's got a hungry guy who wants his position in El Bazzi, so I think it just makes for a lot of good stuff. So, but yeah, that one shakes, you know, shuffles the deck a little bit, but I think the fans still, you know, get a good one in that one. Another Apex card, if I'm not mistaken, so that kind of, I mean, we've kind of seen it. The difference between Apex cards and on, oh yeah, hiccups, I'm sorry, people, on the road cards.
On the road, yeah.
Yeah, just is a different story. Before we talk about UFC, ONE Championship debut on Friday in Denver, the same place where Mike Perry just took out Luke Rockhold and they had Conor McGregor. What are your expectations and what do you expect to see out of Demetrius Johnson, Adriano Moraes 3?
I think it's going to be a heck of a fight. It's probably going to go the distance. You know, there's a long story there with them, so they're going to want to you know, cement not their legacy, but, you know, they're each looking to prove that they're the better fighter of the two, right? So, and Mighty Mouse is kind of talking retirement. Is that true? Yeah. Or not too many fights after this?
He says day by day, but it's like, you know, if he goes out there and knocks him out, it's like, I mean, can it get much better? It might just be time.
Right, right. So with that in mind, I suspect he's going to try and do something cool, you know, flying armbar type stuff. So it's going to be great. Back in the U.S., the crowd's going to be excited. I'm looking forward to that. And just in general, you know, I kick myself because when I do watch a one on Prime, it's always entertaining, always exciting fights. I just don't remember to do it with regularity the way I do with UFC. And that's something that, you know, I don't think they can do anything else to get me to normalize watching one the way I watch UFC. I just have to do it on my own, and it's something I haven't quite got around to yet. So this one, I'll definitely watch the whole thing for sure.
I think there's a bit of a culture thing. I think that, for example, you got to be familiar with some of the guys that haven't had that Western exposure. And what I mean by that, for example, Rainier de Ritter, Ong Lian Song.
Yeah.
I mean, they've never fought for Bellator or UFC, so you have to have almost followed them exclusively in ONE, as opposed to a Demetrius and Eddie and all that other stuff when guys go over. Ben Askren as well, going back years now. I think that's part of it. Obviously, some fans, some are more American-based, and maybe there's an accessibility thing there, like Angela Lee, for example. I think that that's part of it. Her brother, too, obviously. So I do think that that's part of it. Also, most of their events, if you don't have a big MMA guy, it's a lot of Muay Thai and kickboxing.
Mm-hmm.
Most Western fans, you know, like, we already have so many sports and we more have the boxing thing. When you talk about in Asia, I mean, it's like, it's just like a part of it. They don't necessarily have maybe soccer fields everywhere in Thailand, but like, so many of them, they do a little bit of the Muay Thai, and it's, you know, it's kind of like having the ball and playing catch almost over there in that part of the world. So I get it. Culturally, you know, I'm sure there's a ton of fans who love watching Muay Thai for ONE. I'll tell you right now, we have a bunch of videos on Cage Side Press. The frequency with which the ONE Championship videos pop off randomly, like Rod Tang, Sema Petch, I mean, these things will take off for thousands of views. Like, mind you, we don't even upload them necessarily all the time on time because we're focused on the Western stuff with MMA.
Yeah.
There is a audience for all of them, just straight up. So I understand why ONE Championship, all right, US is big, but we have so many people watching Muay Thai. We're not going to necessarily start investing in more MMA, less Muay Thai, because there's a lot of money in it already.
Yeah.
So I acknowledge that. But my point of that is that I think that's part of it. In terms of US, we talked about it last week. I think that Asian fans, culturally, they tend to be quieter in the arena. Not that they don't enjoy a good fight like we all do, but it's just a thing. Going back to Pride, they said it. Everyone likes to stay quiet and let you hear your corner, etc. Enjoy the martial arts of it all. I think Denver's going to be ready for some carnage. Sold out, small
Let's go.
venue.
Yeah.
It's gonna feel intimate. It's gonna feel good. They're probably gonna feel like they could lift the roof off of that small building. I want to see what they do for Demetrius. How much do they really like Rod Tang, Adriano here in America? Stamp Fairtex, she really plays to the crowd, does the whole dance walking out to the cage. Rainier DeRitter is doing, two division champ. He's doing a submission thing. There's a lot of stuff. I want to see the fans really react to them, and I want to feel that change, feel that difference in the broadcast. That's my hope. Demetrius and Adriano, I mean, okay, let me. You know how we just got done with the Grand Prix, right, for Bellator?
Yep.
If I was making an 8-man Grand Prix, you almost feel like you're leaving someone out worldwide. Because let's say we go Aljo, Henry, Marab, then are we going to try to throw in Corey Sandhagen, Chito, Rafion, Patchy? That's seven. Where's Song Yadong get in there? Where
Yeah.
does, by the way, Demetrius and Adriano, you know what they weigh in for their fights at one? 135 pounds.
Wow,
You're
yeah.
telling me you would leave a Demetrius off the 8-man tournament for the world?
No,
You're
that's
telling me
right.
Adriano doesn't deserve it? I mean, this is who is the bantamweight king? We talk about the competitiveness of the division. It's just so good right now. And this is just another testament. I know that Demetrius, he's gonna keep getting questions about the flyweights of the world. He should be in the talk right now for the bantamweights of the world. He should be in there. He should be up there with Aljo and Henry. He's 1-1 with Henry Cejudo, who could become the champion again, for crying out loud.
Yep.
My point of that is these are two high-level guys, 1-1. Adriano's still young. Demetrius Johnson still got it. All the reason to enjoy this. Very complete fighters, very gifted fighters. Adriano, maybe more physicality. Kind of like a bantamweight Charles Oliveira is the way I like to describe his game. And then Demetrius, the wrestling is really the difference. He's just so complete. He can strike with you with hands and feet, wrestle you, well conditioned, can grapple down there with his jiu-jitsu and mix it all up. The only thing he has not been blessed with is height and knockout power. Let's say it like it is. He's got every other attribute in MMA.
Yep.
It makes for a great fight. People talk about it all the time. He's the guy who should be on the Mount Rushmore, but always gets left off Mount Rushmore of the best fighters. I it's like just enjoy it while it lasts, and that's my last thing to say about it. You know what I mean?
I
Yeah.
hear you.
So.
Yes. Oh, but you forgot to mention Super Saiyan Northcutt, the
Oh yes,
return.
yes. I mean, freaking the Super Saiyan himself. I mean, I saw him out there. One posted a video. I don't know. It looked like a giant roll of carpet. I don't know if it was like a hay bale or something, but look on ONE Championship's Twitter or Instagram, it's there, and
Yeah.
I'm like, this thing. I mean, I've seen Sage, he's taller than me. He's, I think, coming up on 6 foot for a lightweight. That thing was probably looked twice his size, and he's just rolling it like it's a freaking tire off a tractor, and I'm like, what the flip? Yes, of course, I'm happy to see Sage back. I hope it's a good time for him.
Me too.
Yeah, so there we go. Did you see this thing about ONE Championship and Francis Ngannou?
No.
So apparently, Chatrit spoke with Ariel Helwani, and he said on Saturday, this past Saturday, we're gonna meet with Ngannou for a final offer.
Oh.
Chatrit, I guess, did an interview and said, "We never did present a final offer. We had a good talk, ended on good terms, but we are not on the same page." And so we're on good terms, but we are no longer in the Francis Ngannou running.
Okay.
Ariel Helwani goes on his show, says he had a talk with Ngannou. He says quite bluntly, what happened is Ngannou is very close to signing a deal with somebody. And he said as he was upfront with ONE Championship about that. And that's more or less what led to the breakdown. It kind of seemed like, hey, I'm already committed to signing with Nike, so I'm kind of just letting you know, Adidas, as you go into it. And I think maybe ONE felt like, well, now it just feels like you just want us to outdo another person. And that just kind of, fizzled out. But I do
Gotcha.
want to ask you, obviously, ONE Championship has the dollars. Are you surprised that they kind of fell out of the running for a guy like Francis.
No, I'm not surprised. I think that Francis Ngannou has a clear vision for his combat sports future, and I don't think it's going to match up with a lot of the big players we considered as options for him. And as a result, I think I don't know. I feel like the window isn't closing on him, but I think he needs to hurry up and make a choice, and maybe compromise a little bit. You can't get it all. You can't get everything you want. Like, you're not just doing this by yourself. You need a big company to use their promotional power to help continue to build up your brand. So, unless he just goes straight boxing, but it doesn't seem like he wants to do that. And so I'm not surprised. I hate to say this, but I think maybe he's being a little too demanding. I mean, even BKFC, Dave Feldman said like it was just too much. We could not come to terms. He wanted way too much money. Now, that's not to say he doesn't deserve a whole lot of money. I don't know what numbers they're talking about, but if everybody's closing the door on you or close to closing the door on you, maybe it makes sense to readdress your demands.
So here's what crossed my mind. In this scenario, I would imagine that what he's trying to do, he wants the flexibility to box, he wants to take a boxing fight first, but he wants to secure an MMA contract before then because you don't want to take a boxing L and then try to negotiate an MMA contract. You kind of want to two birds with one stone, one doesn't interfere with the other. And so even if I get destroyed by anyone, preferably Tyson Fury, but I get it, that fight may not happen. He wants to make sure he has lined these up correctly. Now, one championship with respect to them, with respect to PFL, although that starts to feel like what we're going to see, what crosses my mind is that look what happened with Ryan Garcia, right? All of this talk about who gets the rematch and rehydration, A side, B side. I think that Ngannou doesn't want to be in a company where they want to have his boxing fight at Showtime, but one championship is like, yeah, we got to co-promote with Amazon Prime if you want to box.
Right.
Now, mind you, could he be compensated for it? Sure, but maybe he feels like maybe a Bellator is saying, you know what, we're about to. Like, sell our kidneys, sell plasma to pay you what we need to get you over here. And then you already have the Showtime thing. You can box Deontay Wilder straight up. Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe it's something like that. I'll say again, Francis Ngannou, Bellator has never been able to put on a successful pay-per-view. I went to the one that was supposed to be their first one. I know it fizzled out. I know that everything they tried with MSG, with Fedor, Chael, Wanderlei, all that didn't work out the way they wanted it to numbers-wise. It hasn't been in their business. If Bellator feels it's worth probably going broke over to bring a Francis Ngannou there, and they're like, by the way, you didn't even have to debut for us this year. We'll build it up. Go fight Deontay Wilder on Showtime, our partner. I don't know. Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know if it could be a twofer, and maybe PFL says, hey, look, we're on ESPN2. Tyson Fury's with us on Top Rank. Go box Tyson, then come be a part of the PFL pay-per-view with Jake Paul. Maybe that's what we're going to see. But in my mind, those are the only two options now. And it really comes down to maybe who has more dollars and who is willing to be a better partner in the boxing business, you know what I mean? Who's going to be like, hey, we're going to do everything to promote you for us, and then when you're ready, come back to MMA. That's the only thing I can think of. What about you?
Yeah, that makes sense. So you think one is not on the table because they don't have that boxing connection.
I think they essentially took themselves off the table. They said, you know what, we're just our business is just maybe not going to jive with what you're looking for right now. And so they're out of the running. BKFC, probably just like, you know what, we just can't do it, money wise and all that. If I'm Ngannou, I want more money too to take the gloves off, by the way.
Well,
Just saying
yeah.
that bluntly.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. You've painted a very probable scenario with either Bellator or PFL. So hopefully he's able to get something like that because they already have those boxing tie-ins. That makes sense.
Can I ask you, and I'll be honest, maybe I'm also victim to the hype. I think about that moment with him and Tyson Fury, after Tyson's fight, and it feels
Right,
like,
right.
is this about to happen? Is this like, I'm not gonna lie, one of the first events I ever got credential for, in all honesty, was the Mayweather-McGregor press conference.
Okay.
I cannot tell you how hyped I was to be part of it. I did not have the access I did. I do have a good clip of talking to Mayweather at a presser, and I'm still very happy about that. Look, like you're a guy hasn't done too many events to talk to Mayweather. I was freaking ecstatic.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, I could tell you right now, when I think about that event, just as a bystander, I got so excited. The melding of the worlds. We've learned better. Everything's bigger. Social media is bigger. The whole business is bigger. I was very hyped about it. The part of me now, I feel like I would be heartbroken if any other fight happens for Ngannou. Deontay Wilder, Showtime connection. I'm just like, it's good, but I want the Tyson Fury fight. I want the biggest against the biggest, you know? And so part of me feels like, okay, that makes me feel like if Ngannou wants that too, it's got to be through PFL, ESPN. Already there, less red tape. If Showtime and, Bellator and all that, also the pay-per-view model. Bellator and Showtime obviously have a great infrastructure, but when we keep hearing about this, is Bellator getting sold to PFL and all this? Is they're talking about Tyson and Deontay Wilder, same card, different opponents. I'm just like, bruh, I don't know if we're close to any of these fights. And that makes me worried for Ngannou because after all this and we don't get a big fight, I'm just kind of like, the air will be let out of that balloon so fast I can't really describe it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and I mean, there's a risk there for him that he's taking by sticking to his guns, and so it's possible we could see nothing.
Don't say
Oh,
that.
sorry.
No, I get it. Okay, let me ask you, in your heart, do you think we will see either Deontay or Tyson next? No ifs, ands, or buts about it for Ngannou.
This year?
2023, yep.
No. I don't think we'll see either one.
I
I
hate
really
to tell
don't.
you, my heart tells me the same.
Yeah.
I think that when Ngannou what didn't enter, okay, like Tyson Fury with the Usyk thing, right? And like, oh, they keep, changing the terms, the fight's falling apart, all this, they're posting videos online. I thought when the second they started talking about a guy respectfully, I don't follow boxing, I don't know who else was in the running for Tyson, but when Francis Ngannou didn't even get brought up, even though he'd be on the timetable, I really was like, this is about to blow up in a lot of guys' faces. Because here you thought that was, it should be on the table. Tyson Fury's just looking for an exhibition. I think perfect timing. Let's get it on. Especially if, okay, you've moved on from Usyk for now and all this. Okay, go make some money. Let's revisit this in 6 months with Usyk. Perfect. Instead, it's like, what are we doing now? So, I don't know. For Ngannou, I just worry that he's targeting the big guys. The big guys feel like he's just there anytime they want him. He's not a priority. And I think that that is where this becomes a very temperamental situation for Ngannou to make his bag. You lose one, there's not a guarantee that it's gonna be as big for the next one, even if it
Right.
is Tyson. So,
Yeah, that's true.
yeah.
All right.
Anyway, what happens, we'll find out, but, I'll say this. I think it would be an abundance of riches if on Friday, before one is in US, Francis Ngannou just comes out and he's like, I'm joining PFL, but first we're boxing Tyson Fury.
Yep. Ba-bam.
Rest in peace, me. Anyway, let's talk about some MMA. Let's talk about
Okay.
UFC. This Saturday, pay-per-view, very decent card. That triple header at the top kind of covers it in terms of like a good 2 hour block. Yan Shannon, Jessica Andrade, love it. High stakes, probably title eliminator. Nothing more to say. Let's start with the co-main event, Gilbert Burns, Bilal Muhammad. Short notice is the biggest thing I hate about this because I think full camp, probably a very different fight. Win or lose on both sides, first of all. Secondly, let's talk about the fact that we do get it. They add some star power, high stakes. Like I said, both managed by Ali Abdelaziz. If the winner of this doesn't kick out Colby Covington from the title shot, I riot like Justin Gaethje, to be honest. I can't tell you how much more. What more do you want these men to do to earn it on the merit to jump over the guy, right?
Yeah,
Especially after
short
all this with.
notice. Gilbert Burns fighting, a month ago, right? Yeah.
Yeah, especially with Colby, he's just been MIA. I'm like, the hype isn't there anymore. I'm sorry. Anyway, talking about this fight, I think the biggest thing is going to be cardio. Who on short notice has the better cardio? Gilbert just fought. That should be to his advantage. Gilbert, sorry, Bilal, coming off of Ramadan, fasting, all this. The guys who observe have all said the same thing. You don't really like to compete too close to it, during it, at the end of it, because your entire body is thrown off its rhythm. Because you're not, as a pro athlete, everything's about a schedule and a system, right? It's like a machine. Diet, exercise is obviously different because you are, you are adjusting for the fact that you are fasting during this period for about, I think, a month and a half, 2 months it is. So, how is Bilal physically? How is he feeling? I'm sure he's in shape. I'm sure he's at the gym. I don't think he's, quote, suffering. That's not the point of the fast. But there is a definite impact that, hey, I am maybe not quite as dialed in for a 25-minute battle with an elite athlete who, maybe hasn't gotten too out of shape in Gilbert Burns. Now, they talk about it all the time. What's the first thing you do after a fight? Eat. Because you've been dieting, that's the one time you do kind of have the cheat week, not just the cheat day. So I think that that's a big part of it, is that whose cardio is actually better for as long as this goes. Remember, they agreed to a five rounder, for crying out loud.
That's crazy.
Okay. Secondly, obviously stylistically, both very well rounded. I would say that the sheer. They're both good in all areas. I would say that Gilbert is the cleaner striker. Bilal is built like Khabib, and I always make this comparison. It doesn't look like the cleanest striking, but you could tell he's just a very thick guy for welterweight. Like, he's a tough guy to take down. He's a tough guy to keep off of you when he's coming forward because he's just a very stocky welterweight. I do think that Gilbert is a cleaner striker. I think that he kind of puts a little. I think he's just naturally more heavy-handed guy. Bilal, to his credit, much improved as a striker, but I can't tell you that he's got this one shot, I'm gonna hurt you when I hit you kind of power. It's like he's thick, but he just doesn't have that, send you to the shadow realm knuckles. You know what I mean? And that could be a factor if they start neutralizing each other's grappling. So I do think, once again, cardio, that's a big part of it. Grappling, Bilal's got great wrestling. He's great when he's on top of you. Gilbert, ironically better off of his back, still is a great grappler, good takedowns, but it's kind of like jiu-jitsu centric, whereas Bilal's is more wrestling centric. And so how is that going to work out? Typically, when you have two good guys on the ground, the one who's more of a natural getting you off your feet tends to be the one to have the advantage. I think for Gilbert, that's going to be a very big thing. If your cardio is indeed better, you have to be sure you don't give up easy takedowns to Bilal. Anyway, I think I've talked enough. Let's go. What do you got?
Let's go. Yeah, no, I'm with you. Everything makes sense. Perfect sense. The Ramadan thing, of course, it's a factor to consider, but I almost feel like if I'm Bilal, just grit. I'm just going to prove to everybody that it's not going to bother me because that's all anyone's talking about is, oh, how's it going to affect him? I think it's less going to be a factor for him than on the flip side, Burns just having come out of a camp and a victory will be a benefit. I think that's going to be the more the X factor for this matchup, because I think Gilbert Burns is just more ready to go because of the fighting a month ago against Jorge Masvidal. So I'll keep it brief. Yeah, they're well matched. You're right. Bilal's grappling is wrestling centric. Burns is jiu-jitsu centric. I think Burns is the better striker, has more power. Yeah, Bilal, sneaky power, right? Like Khabib. But I think it's going to go the distance, and I think Burns is just going to win by points.
Five rounds. Two-week notice, five rounds. That's what we're going with.
That's what I'm going with, yes, sir.
My man. Okay. I feel like I got to be real with you. If they fight great five rounds on 2 weeks, I would be shocked. I just think respectfully, they're actually going to try to go for broke early.
Okay.
I think that it's... Oh, man. It's hard to not get pumped up about the momentum that Gilbert Burns has right now. I think on full camp, I tend to go with a guy like Bilal. Short notice, I feel like this favors Gilbert. And for that reason, he just fought. I don't think he's gotten too far away from losing his abs. I feel like they tend to all help each other a lot at a big team like Killcliff, so you don't get too far out of shape even after you've just fought. I think that all of that comes together to help a guy like Gilbert. I think on a full camp, I'd probably tell you that Bilal probably gets dialed in to take down and neutralize him. But on short notice in this scenario, I favor Gilbert, his weapons against Bilal's. I'm going to say third round TKO.
Oh, TKO. Okay.
I think Bilal going to give him everything he's got early, and then it's going to be a breakdown over time.
All right. I thought you were going to say Los Angeles. I thought you were going to say submission. Excuse me.
That crossed my mind, but I just feel like Bilal's going to keep the neck and joints safe for this one.
There we go. All right.
The main event, the return of the bantamweight, former bantamweight king Henry Cejudo against the current title holder Aljamain Sterling. I think that had we seen a healthy TJ Dillashaw, we'd probably be saying that this is too big a mountain for Henry. 3 years off. We know he's been coaching, but does that translate to your own performance? I don't know. Never lost either title, flyweight or bantamweight, did Henry. But then how do you pick against a guy who has shown visible improvement every fight out, both Petr Yan fights and then... Like I said, he doesn't get the credit. It kind of felt like a layup because TJ Dillashaw had one arm. That's unfortunate for Aljo because he has been putting in work, looks in great shape. This is now the biggest test. How good has Aljo gotten since the rematch with Petr? And how sharp is Henry compared to the last time we saw him 3 years ago? And look, the way they match up on paper, obviously the well-rounded game of Henry, I think it's implemented a lot differently. His wrestling is a huge deal. His ability to go from that full arsenal striking to the grappling is a huge weapon. I think that Aljamain's biggest strength is the fact that he is very tall for that weight class. He is very big. When he starts pushing you and wearing on you against the fence and getting you down, he's a lot to deal with. And that opens up what he can do on the feet. Very unorthodox, very just a little bit like old school John Jones. Has long limbs, tries to really, really utilize them. He's not really out there trying to double jab, slip, rip into the body and all this. He tends to really make you more deal with all of that reach that he has out there in the cage. Obviously, when he gets going, he starts sitting on punches and he's a powerful guy himself. Henry, I think it's more, you know, legs for the go. Has hands, but it really is about working from his legs, kicks, pushing you and exploding with his takedowns, etc. Stylistically, very competitive fight. But once again, the X factor. What version of these guys do we actually see when the cage door closes? And I'll use that to toss it to you.
Yeah, that's the question, right? Because there are many examples to make us take this conversation in many different directions. But I always go back to Henry Cejudo, Marlon Moraes, and how down he was and how he fought, clawed his way back to victory. And he's continued to prove everybody wrong, to surprise everybody with his punches, with his striking. We know the wrestling's there. But Aljo's done the same. You know, the Piotr Jan first fight, okay, the controversy. But the second one, he shut everybody up. It's like, I was way better than this guy. I smoked him. And so these are two fighters that people have counted out and who have time and time again proved to be way better than we ever expected, and have both improved greatly in striking and all around MMA. And so I think, though, even though Aljo's been proving everybody wrong more recently, I think this is going to be Cejudo's, you know, like GSP versus Michael Bisping moment, where not necessarily that he's going to win and then disappear, but that he's going to come in. Sure, he'll face some adversity, of course, because Aljo is an excellent fighter, but he's going to come in and stick with it and find a way to win no matter what. That's the great thing about Cejudo. No matter what, he will find a way to win. I don't think it's going to go to the I don't think it's going to go the distance. I think Cejudo is going to find a way to do maybe like a TKO round three. I'm going to steal your pick from the previous fight. So I'm going TKO round three, Henry Cejudo and Nu. And, you know, breaking all the records, Mr. Cejudo will be quadruple. No, what will it be with that goal? He's not going to be triple C.
He's still just the bantamweight king. I know ultimately, I'll say this. How could he not want to go for number four, make that history, be the only fighter to ever win titles in three different weight classes? He always counts his Olympic medal as another C, which, okay, I'll give it to you then. He's got to want that. I can't imagine he wouldn't. I got to say, though, I like Henry. I think that he is going to be all those things we just talked about. Natalie, I'm going with Aljamain. I think that stylistically, he just has it working for him. I think that he's just very prepared to neutralize a lot of the weapons. I think he actually has everything attribute-wise that he needs. He's got that range. He's got the grappling. I think he's very well-rounded. I think that Henry hasn't taken on a guy like Aljo in a minute. I think in hindsight, when you look at the beginning of the end for Marlon Moraes, when you look at some of those other fights, it is very, you know, Aljamain is just a different animal. If Henry is still the best, then my goodness, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing him against Volkan Yair, for sure. But for now, I think it's Aljamain's moment. And I'm going to just say it. I think second round TKO for the Funkmaster.
Yeah, wow, man. That would be a crazy victory for Aljamain Sterling. It would, you know, I wonder if he does TKO second round, do you think Henry Cejudo sticks around? Or does he just go back into retirement? Or is he trying to get a rematch? Because, you know, Sean O'Malley's right there, right? They're not going to, you were saying it earlier, it's not going to, they're probably not going to give these guys a rematch. They're going to give it to Sean O'Malley next. So if your prediction comes true, what do you think Cejudo does?
Oh, that's a good question. You know what? I'll be real with you. I think that he'll see who they offer him and then make the call.
Yeah.
I think that if they say, hey, what if you fight the loser of Alex and Yair in July, like, and you talk about just pursuing featherweight? He might stick around, because then it's like, well, it was always about getting that third belt, right? Then maybe. If they're just like, hey, you know, like, you fight Song now, then I would probably feel like, yeah, I'm out. I good for him, but I'm just not in the business of building up the next guy. You know, I'm in the business of pursuing my own goals.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
That's my thing.
All right.
Next week, the UFC returns to Charlotte, North Carolina. Been a minute. Pretty much heavyweight grappler, heavyweight striker, Jairzinho Rozenstruik against Jelton Almeida. Co-main event, Anthony Smith, Johnny Walker. You'll remember, this is the funny one. Smith and Johnny were supposed to be the main event, and then the UFC just randomly made the call that said, we're going to bump you guys to three rounds, and it's going to be Rozenstruik and Almeida. I still like the pairing, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's kind of a strange thing, change to make, but that they have the reasons, I guess. I don't know. It's still a good one, though.
In my mind, the only thing I could come up with is that Jailton as the main event, if he wins, you build up a new star. Whereas, respectfully, if you keep him in the co-main event and people only tune in for guys you've already established in Anthony Smith and Johnny Walker, maybe people glaze over him. But in this way, you have a chance to really boost up Jailton more so than if he was co-main event and you just kept it Johnny and Anthony. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I
That's the
hear
only
you.
thing I can think of. But look, I mean, just those two fights. All right, I'm sold. Good night of fights. Ian Garry, Daniel Rodriguez come back. Angela Hill, Mackenzie Dern. Good stuff. Good card. We will find out who is the Bantamweight King next week and talk about the future. Until then, guys, it's been a long show. Thank you for tuning in. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week.